Okay, we're up to Perek Vav.
Rabbah, we're going to go into some specific details about
Ivan
Moshe.
What?
Yeah.
You might say more than
I said. You were going to go into the Maisa things.
I did.
Yes. It did.
I
really said that?
Yeah.
I must have had a fit of insanity. Why did I say that? Uh-huh. Okay.
You said last time that she wasn't here because they were on vacation, that you were going to go into more detail when they come back.
So does that mean that someone who doesn't live here should leave?
No, not around. People who don't live here are...
People who live here.
Right. Got to watch what you say. Yeah, the... Okay. What exactly are we supposed to speak about? I usually like to prepare things. What? How? Hashpas Hasviva. Okay.
How to protect ourselves from the negative influences that might be around us.
Are there any negative influences on here?
There are, but just
are you talking about Kiryat Sefer? Right, let me say something that I didn't say that I know that I had wanted to say, but since we finished the topic, I wasn't going to go back just for that. But since we're opening up the topic again, I'll start with that. We asked a question which I never answered, and that is, how is it possible to always strive to live with people who are better than you? Because inevitably, those people don't want to live with you, because they're running away from people who are less than them. So you're running after the people who are better than you to live with them. They're running away from you and running after people better than them, and those people are running away from them. So who can you live with? How do you exist, right? You can't just live with people who are exactly the same as you, because that's not true. The point, I think, is the following. Everybody has positive points and negative points. I may be on a higher level than my neighbor in Shmira Shabbos. My Shmira Shabbos is better than theirs. But on the other hand, they may be on a higher level than me in Shmira Saloshin. They don't speak as much Lashon Hara as I do. So if you look at, you live with people who basically have the same goals, the same standards. But again, people are people. And some are better in some areas, some in different areas. Everybody's hopefully working on themselves and trying to improve in all areas. But they're holding at different places and different things. So the first rule is you taka have to live in a place where people have similar goals, similar desires, they're similar standards and similar values, but they can never be exactly the same. And then you have to look at your neighbors and see their positive points and strive to be like them in those positive points. The negative points, since they're also working on it, and basically they're, you know, on the more or less same general level, are not going to be that negative if you don't, hone in on them and concentrate on them. So if you look at your neighbor and you look at their positive side, the things that they're better than you, then they'll be a positive influence on you. They look at the positive things of you, you'll be a positive influence on them. And if you minimize the negative things and put that more into the general thing that basically they're good people who want to improve, then you can live together with people who are more or less the same, but still have people to look up to, and they'll have people to look up to. That is, I think, a very healthy attitude, and in order to do that, you have to be a positive person and see the positive things about other people and not constantly look at the negatives. Because the Maril Diskin says that we normally think that judging people favorably is for their sake. Right? Give them the benefit of the doubt. He said, but it's just much for your sake. Because if you give people the benefit of the doubt and you see them as positive people, then there'll be positive influences on you. But if you see all the people around you as negative people, then they're going to be negative influences on you. You're not going to have the peer pressure to function. So I think that's a healthy attitude, but it has to be that you're not, you know, creating a fantasy world. Right? If you're living amongst people that Taka don't have the same values and don't have the same goals and don't have the same standards of conduct, then that's not an environment you should be in. And if you're forced to be in such an environment, then you have to create like the bubble we said, where you have your anchor, you have your hashbos, hasviva, your environment that you consider yourself part of, and you happen to be amongst the other environment, not with it. And somebody just wrote an article, they interviewed me about Kiruv on the campus. So I want to know about, you know, people going to live on a college campus to be Makariv people. So basically I told them, look, if you don't have, you have to have one of a few things to be able to, either you have to go with a group of people and create your own little bubble on the college campus where you're not living basically with the college campus, just amongst them, but you have your own little bubble. Or if you can't do that, then you have to live in a either live in a community nearby and commute, find a strong Jewish community nearby, or if you can't do that, at least be in that community and feel that's your anchor. Attend shiurim there, have a connection with a rav in that nearby community, spend a Shabbos once a month there, where you can feel that that is your real anchor, that's your real community, and you're just amongst the college campus to be able to be makar of them. But that's not where your environment is. If you can't have any of that, then you're gonna end up being mushba, not mashpia. If you're going to have to live in a place alone without any anchor, eventually it's going to have effect on you, your family, your children, whatever. That kind of college kiruv can't be. Yeah.
So if you're living with Gazi people, but they have different values, totally different ways of holding, can you still look to the places where they're strong and allow that to inspire, or do you need to adopt the traditions because of the other stuff?
It depends how.
A woman doesn't cover her hair, but she really honors her husband. Can you look to the honoring of the husband and not be affected by?
Well, honoring your husband is much more important than covering your hair. I'm just kidding. It depends. I can't answer that globally. It depends what. You know, there are a lot of people have a lot of positive things. Even non-frum people have positive things about them. But if the environment you're living in is so negative, and honing in on the positive things is like living in a fantasy world, right? Then that's not possible. If it's not all that negative, and there's a lot of positive things, and the negatives are minimal, handleable. Then it's a different story. It really depends on the situation. Any other questions on this? Okay, now what are we supposed to speak about now in Matityahu? I think that the Moshav fits the description that I gave. Basically, the people who live here, right, I would say 99%, 98% or whatever, with percentages, with how that fits in with people and numbers, are people who have the same values, same standards, want the same things, want to improve, accept the same value standards, authority or whatever. There are exceptions, unfortunately, but the exceptions are minimal. So therefore, people can look at their neighbors in a positive way, and even though, again, everybody has positive things and negative things about them, as a kahila, the positive for sure outweighs the negative in any person here, and people can hone in on the positive of their neighbors and learn from them or whatever, and minimize the negative things, and the people with the negative things and look at the other people who have positive things in those areas and learn from them. Those exceptions, especially sometimes teenagers that live here, don't live here because they want to live here, only live here because they have to, and they're not really, don't want to live the way other people here live, and don't want to keep up the standards of the community for whatever reason they have, or rebelling, or whatever it may be. So those people do cause a negative hashpa to people here. People have to be exposed to things that they shouldn't be seeing, whether it's the way people dress, or the way they act, or Chilul Shabbos even, which is surely has an effect on people. Right? And with all of the rachmanis that we have on the kids off the derech or whatever, you have to have rachmanis on the people here too. That they didn't move here to see people smoking on Shabbos or walking around without yarmulkes or walking around without clothes, especially the girls. The boys are without yarmulkes, the girls are without anything. And that's a bad hashpah. It shouldn't be minimized, and it shouldn't be trivialized. And you know, well, we have to have rachmanis and what's it called, and love. Yeah, you have to have love, you have to have rachmanis, you have to have love and rachmanis on the people who live here also. They're no less objects of love and rachmanis than these children. And most of them are not children anymore, they're little adults. And like we always said, there has to be some kind of happy medium over here of how, on the one hand, not to alienate the children completely, on the other hand, to demand from them that if you want to be around here or whatever, then you have to, when you roam, do as the Romans do. And if you can't, then maybe you can't be here. Because it's not fair to what's it called, to the other people here to be exposed to that, and they didn't move here to be exposed to that. Yeah.
Just a quick question, because I know this comes out a lot of things in Ramat Beit Shemesh, for instance, where you hear about these the black hat thug kids, you know, who will beat up or hurt, you know, kids from the other side or something, and it's not like a hashpa the other way. I mean, that sort of, is there a happy medium? What do you do with these kinds of organizations?
I don't know. Our derech is not.
Right. And then the derech here certainly is not to be.
Is not alimut. Is not what's it called? What violence?
Violence.
But that's not the good word. It's not violence. It's whatever it is. There's a better word for alimut. In any case, whatever it is, that's not the way to deal with it. The problem is that sometimes people get frustrated. That there's no way. You can't, you know, there's people, you try to speak to them, right? Can you be sensitive to other people's, what's it called, feelings, right? You want to do what you want to do, but there's something you can do publicly or privately or whatever, and not affect other people's sensitivities. And sometimes people are open to that. They're mentioned. They're just, maybe not be frum, but at least they're mentioned. And the people are not mentioned altogether. They're azeponim, mechutzofim. They don't care about how they affect anybody else. And those kind of people you have to deal with as azeponim. And sometimes that's not with tremendous marchmonis. It's rachmonis on the other people, not on them. And how exactly to do that, what we can do without being violent, right, is very limited. But you can make it very uncomfortable for them. If they want to make it uncomfortable for other people, then they should know it's going to be made uncomfortable for them. That's a very frustrating situation, because there are people here that couldn't care less about how they affect other people. Right? Many of them are teenagers. And they make it very uncomfortable for people who live here. And it's not fair. And on the other hand, they're needs are also important, but their needs don't take precedence over a whole community. So again, there's a lot of bleeding hearts who have such rachmanis, and you have to have love, but on the other hand, there has to be discipline also, and people have to know they can't just do whatever they want. And if they affect other people negatively, then they're going to be affected negatively. That's the real world. You can't just do whatever you want and expect everybody to just love you and understand you and live and let live. That's good for hippies. It's not good for people who are Torah people. Okay. Any questions? Comments? Anything else that has to be discussed more lemaisa. I don't know more lemaisa you can get than that. There's the normal and the abnormal, the klal and the yotzei min haklal we covered. I don't know what there else is to cover.
What's the responsibility of the lay person in the community? Say, Shalom Aleinafshi, I'll make a bubble in my home and keep my children protected. And whatever goes on around me is not really my problem. Somebody else's problem. Or is it my problem? Because it does affect
If you live in a community, you have responsibility to the whole community. And you can't say, Shalom Aleinafshi. You have to try to do something. If you tried everything you can do and you can't, then you have to save yourself if you can. Nobody else is interested in doing anything.
Could you be more specific? Because when you're saying you're talking about issues within a community, you're saying everything that you're supposed to do that's appropriate. What is appropriate if you have a neighbor who's, you know, what is our responsibility? What can we do? What shouldn't we be doing?
What you surely can do is to go to that person privately, nicely, and say that in a nice way that you are affecting me and my children and the other people around here in a very negative way. And there are standards in this community, right? And we would hope that you're a nice person and that you are a mensch. And therefore, whatever you want to do on your own or whatever, but it shouldn't be where it affects other people negatively. And see what kind of answer you get. If you get an answer that the person at least hears what you have to say, if you get a chutzpahdik answer and whatever, then you have to deal with azeh panim as azeh panim.
So, but also, I mean, just to be clear, shouldn't be men talking to women and women talking to men. It should be more appropriately.
Yeah, yeah. A man to a man and a woman to a woman, right?
I think that is also for teenagers, right?
There are times that after all the women tried to work on teenage girl, because that's the reality over here. That's mostly the problems are not adults, families who choose to live here. Okay, for most part, mostly they're people who basically don't live here because they want to live here because their parents live here, and if they have their choice, would not live here because they don't like the standards, for one thing or the other. So. Women should speak to these girls or whatever, and men should speak to the boys. But sometimes, after everything has been tried, then maybe it's responsibility of men also to go over to some of these girls and speak to them. What's it called? There's a older father image or whatever. Or the officials of the community should speak to them. Right? Or the rav of the community should speak to them. Right? There's different things, who should speak first and who should speak second. You don't want to, you know, use all your cards and not hold back something that there's something to fall back on. And therefore, sometimes it's good that some people speak and then more responsible authority people and then more. And then you've tried everything and nothing works, then there have to be other solutions.
And where the
parents
fall in this? Parents. People be checking with the
parents before. Parents many times are part of the blame because they don't discipline their children properly, and they let them do whatever they want. And sometimes parents would love to discipline their children, have tried, they just can't. Okay, people who don't have teenage children who say, "Well, why don't these people control their children?" Right, they don't understand sometimes that you can't control teenage children. You can't even control adult children. Sometimes you can't even control little children. But they're uncontrollable. So sometimes the parents are to blame and sometimes not. It says when a person goes to Shamayim, they're going to bring his parents to the din. And they're going to determine the following. If the person did something wrong, and the reason he did it wrong is because parents didn't teach him properly, or didn't discipline him properly, then they're not going to beat the person, they're going to beat the parents. If the malachim determined, the parents did everything they could, the child just didn't accept it. Right? The parents did, they disciplined, and they educated, and they tried. And they weren't successful because the kids are human beings who have free choice. Then it's not the parents' fault, the parents are let off, and the child is the one who's responsible. It depends. Sometimes parents are responsible. Parents are not always responsible. Only for psychiatrists are parents always responsible. But in the real world, parents many times do all the right things. And Avraham Avinu and Sarah had a Yishmael, and Yitzchak and Rivka had an Esav, and can't always blame the parents. Can't always blame the parents. But you can't always not blame the parents either. Sometimes parents can do more. They can try. And some parents just don't care, or don't feel that, you know, they want to put in the effort, or they have crazy ideas that either they thought up themselves or were implanted in them in irresponsible people. Like in the Goyish world, I don't want to mention the Jewish ones because I don't want to open a Pandora's box here and be guilty of perhaps Lashon Hara, definitely not Motzi Shemra, but Lashon Hara at least. Mm-hmm. So I'll mention, and you know, the Dr. Spock generation, right, destroyed a generation of children because of, you know, spare the rod completely, you know, don't ever hit your children and don't ever yell at them and just, you know, what do you think about that and how do you feel about that and, you know, everybody is equal and we're all a bunch of friends and we don't want to chas v'shalom be judgmental. And that kind of philosophy seeped into Judaism too. And there are rabbonim, I'm treading on dangerous ground here. Keep my mouth shut. Okay, in any case, there are rabbonim who are influenced by these things and espouse this kind of narishkeit, and that is being very, very benevolent, because I really should call it something else, not narishkeit. But also have destroyed children. And I see it here in the community. People who have followed Adkan. Yeah.
So I wanted to say I really appreciate this conversation and the, you know, the
I don't.
The yeah. I think that before it's a problem, we also have to say how do you see the problem before it becomes a problem? How do we help to make it not become the problem it becomes?
Let's put it this way. This is not a problem of Matit Yahu. Baruch Hashem, in Matit Yahu, at least we recognize and we try to do something about it. Whether we're successful or not is a different story. But we recognize there's a problem, and we recognize there's a problem on both sides. How, not overreacting, not underreacting. Whether we know how to deal with it or not, I don't know. I really don't know. I wish I did. It's very frustrating, and unfortunately, it's frustrating for everybody. And everybody thinks that if I don't know how to do it, but the rabbi should know. So in the end, you know, I'm the one who gets like, well, what are we supposed to do? And I don't have any clue more than you do, right? But it's not just Matit Yahu. It's everywhere. And take my word for it, I've been a lot of places, okay, in the last few weeks. No, and I've seen a lot of communities, and all the faces change and the names change. Same problems everywhere, except some places don't want to admit they have problems, and they brush it under the carpet to pretend they don't have these problems, and they don't have to deal with it. Most places deal with it. I give Kiryat Sefer a lot of credit because they have a lot of problems there. If you think we have problems, there are a lot of problem children at Kiryat Sefer. Right, off the derech, whatever, proportionately, same proportion, if not more, than Matit Yahu. And they don't brush it under the carpet. They deal with it. I don't know if I agree how they deal with it all the time. I'm sure they don't agree how we deal with it all the time either. But they try to deal with it. And they have people that they pay good money to deal with it. There are other communities that don't, that just brush it under the carpet. And it's every community. It's not just Haredi communities, it's Dati Le'umi communities, same thing across the board. It's in America, it's here, it's everywhere. Everywhere. It's somehow a Makas Medina. There are two different opinions. Some say that it's something that is intrinsic to this generation for some reason. And some say, no, it's always existed. Except there weren't that many from people, so proportionately there was less people going off the derech. Today there are so many more from people. And we try to deal with all of them in one mold. We haven't yet perfected how to deal with different kinds of people. And because of that, a lot of people can't fit that mold. And the Nela, they're out of the box. So, I don't know who's right. They're probably both are right, somewhat. But whatever it is, it is a major problem today. And it's everywhere. It's not only Matityahu's problem. And not too many people know how to deal with it, you know, successfully. Because the problem still exists. And there's all different opinions, and there's all different ways, and some things work with some people, and some things work with other people, and that's really the answer. The answer is, you have to work with individuals. You're never going to solve the problem globally. You're going to solve it individual, by reacting with that individual the way they have to be reacted with, based on all of the circumstances, what they need, and how they affect other people. And when it comes to a family, right, usually we hold, you don't throw somebody out of a family. First of all, you don't throw anybody out altogether. At schools, you don't throw kids out. Somebody told me, well, you throw garbage out. You don't throw people out. Right? People are people. But on the one hand, Gedolim all said, as long as a child is not a bad influence on others, then you can keep them in the house and keep them in the school. As soon as they become a bad influence on others, then you have to have rachmanis on the others, not on them. Now that obviously has to be weighed, how much of a bad influence and how bad will it be if you take them out of the school or take them out of the family. But you have to weigh one after the other. But if they're really a bad influence and there are other options for them away from the family, out of this school, then that's what has to be done. Because you have to have rachmanis on the people they're affecting negatively rather than rachmanis on them. Because then you have more rachmanis on more people than just one person. It's dine nefashos. Okay? Dine nefashos, nobody judges alone. But dine nefashos, it's dine nefashos on both sides. It's not only on the side of the child who's making trouble. It's the side of the children who are being affected by that person. And the community is being affected. And you have to weigh out the pros and the cons on both sides and then decide what to do. So it's really an individual, every situation is individually unique and needs to be addressed like that. And even in that case, it's not always clear what to do or what you can do. So it's a very frustrating situation for people who are in responsible positions and have to do something and they can't ignore it. And they know that they're choser onim. They're just frustrated that there's nothing you can do. Okay, and again, people who are in counseling, therapists, know that there's a lot of problems out there, and if they've been in it for a while, they know that there's a lot of times there's just nothing you can do. You can try to help. You can be very happy when you're successful. But many times you just feel helpless. You try everything, every method you can think of, and nothing works. You're just dealing with people who there's nothing you can do with them. It's very frustrating. So that's the reality. That's the lamaisa. And it's people have to get chizuk from the fact that there's a lot of positive things around. So get chizuk from that, and the problems are problems. Life isn't without problems. No place isn't without problems. There are no perfect places in this world. People who are looking to move to perfect places aren't going to find them. The only place that's serene with basically no problems and everybody is just, you know, serenely, it's called a cemetery. Nobody wants to move there.
Quiet.
Right. Yes.
The Rav was talking about the people as being Aziz Panim. I've had a lot of dealings with a lot of the teenagers over the years, and now still. And I haven't found one yet that you can't look and see is underneath it all is a really nice and good kid. And perhaps the powers that be might have to take a very strong attitude, but I would have thought that just the man in the street should always look at all these kids and look for the good in them. You know, look how they treat their younger sisters, brothers, look for, and just look for that 7 year old kid that's in every person. Those
okay.
people who have to deal with them, maybe then they can sort of try and put in the discipline. But a lot of these children who the worst offenders, if you like, are very angry about various slights that they think have either been done to them or to their families or what have you. And if the man in the street in Matachara is going to start beginning to treat them in any sort of negative way, this is just going to make it much, much worse.
Yes and no. This is Parshas Korach. I'm sure that Korach had Tzelem Elokim, and he was really deep down a nice person. Moshe Rabbeinu still demanded that the Rabbanu Shalom bury him alive. No Rachmanis. Because he was an Azponim who was undermining the entire integrity of Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu, Torah, and therefore, with all his good qualities or whatever, what had to be done was to deal with him the way you deal with Bali Machlokas and Aseponim. With all the Tzelem Elokim, that's Parshas Korach. Okay, it's a fact. The same Moshe Rabbeinu who davened for Klal Yisrael, and they did the most terrible things, the Chet HaEgel and the Chet HaMeraglim, and Moshe was always there to daven for them, and to have Rachmanis on them, and to plead with the Rabbanu Shalom. Here, he didn't daven for Korach, and he didn't plead with the Rabbanu Shalom to have mercy on him, just the opposite. He demanded from the Rabbanu Shalom that he swallow him up alive, and that the other people get burnt alive. That doesn't sound like Moshe Rabbeinu. The Moshe Rabbeinu understood that in certain situations, no matter what kind of Tzelem Elokim and how much you can look, people who choose to behave in a way that undermines the entire integrity of Torah, of discipline, of authority, right, and are a danger to other people, not being cruel to them is being cruel to the people they're affecting. And therefore, there's a time when even a Moshe Rabbeinu has to demand from the Rabbanu Shalom to have people buried alive. So, again, whether that applies to everybody, in every situation, though. It applied to Korach. It didn't apply to the people who were over the ego. It didn't apply to the people who were Chet HaMeraglim. But Korach, v'chol adoso, doson aviran, Korach, there's a certain tipus that there... The mercy, you have mercy, but this is the mercy. The mercy is that certain Rishoyim, it's better for them not to be around. Better for them, the Rachmanis on them is they shouldn't be around. Because if they're around, all they're doing is accumulating more Averas, hurting more people, and the Rachmanis that you have on the Tzibur is more important than the Rachmanis they have, even though they have a Tzelem Elokim, and deep down they have good qualities or whatever, it's true. But you have to deal with the reality of what these people are causing damage, and it's sometimes more important to cut out that damage than to have rachmanis on the people. That's a metzius. Okay? When that's true and when it's not true, and who has to do it and who has to not do it, the people came to the said after Moshe and Aaron did this, they said, Atim Amitim Asam Hashem, you killed the people of God because of this. God sided with Moshe and Aaron, but the people had Rachmanis on Korach and Adoso, and they saw it a little bit differently. They were wrong, but it's very difficult to be able to see things properly, and sometimes you make mistakes, everybody on all sides. But that there is a time when Rachmanis and seeing the good in people is not the way to go. That definitely exists. When that is, you need to be a Moshe Rabbeinu, and you have to have a clear Torah view, and you can't be Nogeya Bedover to be able to decide. But that there is such a situation, yet that exists.
they have the parents who were brought up in this Dr. Spock generation. And what do we do? Then you have the community now be the surrogate parents.
I really shouldn't speak against Dr. Spock 100% because the one time that I changed a cloth diaper in my life, I used Dr. Spock to tell me how to do it. So I did gain something from Dr. Spock once, and the well that you drink from, you shouldn't throw stones into. So,
generation, as you speak,
yeah,
who will not touch their children, and they let their parents get their kids, you know, they'll grow up nicely. You know, you can't be surrogate parents.
I don't know what the question is. What?
I understand it. Everything makes sense, but I'm saying we're practical level as well. You know, if the parents who have their children who were brought up this way, and really it's the parents' fault, and the kids are now Azu's pani, because that's where they're brought up. That's the whole idea. No discipline, kids are
right.
Pani. And it's a community problem. Or do we kick families off?
No, I don't know. Again, it's not a question that I can answer globally. Everything is specific to that situation, and in some situations it's just you have to encourage people to find someplace else which is more matin for them. And some situations it could be the same exact thing, but it's not the parents' fault. And adaraba, that if they would find someplace else, it would be terrible for them,
right,
and terrible for the children, terrible for the moshav. So it's, each situation is different, and you can't make precedents because this is the way you dealt with this one, this is the way you should deal with this one. They're different people, and different, and you have to deal differently. It's you can't make one broad stroke for everybody, and I don't know what the thin strokes are either, but I know that you can't make broad strokes. That for sure. That I know at least. Anybody else? It's a very difficult subject because there's no answers. There really are, there's only possible things to do, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't work. Yeah.
I was going to say it's very hard because, as you say, we don't know what's the broad stroke and what's the thin stroke and who's going to be determining and how do we as the man on the street know.
Yeah, okay. Then unfortunately, what Batya was talking about also, the man on the street isn't discerning enough and sometimes takes the cue from people who should be discerning and maybe are and take it and make broad strokes out of thin strokes. Mm-hmm. And that's also no good. And it's a very, very difficult thing. Very difficult. And that doesn't mean, though, that sometimes you have to act in very stern ways. And Rachmanis is not the... the Rachmanis is to act in stern ways. Now, the extreme example, which we're not talking about over here, is Shaul HaMelech. If you have Rachmanis cruel people, it inevitably is cruelty on merciful people. It's not Rachmanis. It's cruelty. It's just misplaced Rachmanis. So there are times when Rachmanis is misplaced, where you need to be stern, very, very harsh, and times that the opposite is true. Unfortunately, we live in a time of Hester upon him. Nobody can go just to ask God what to do like Moshe Rabbeinu could do. And it's very difficult. Very difficult. Sometimes you make the right decision, sometimes you make the wrong decision. But you have to make some decision at some point. So sometimes it's better even to make the wrong decision, but at least to make some decision, than to never make any decisions because you're afraid that you're going to make the wrong one. None of you should ever want to be Rabbanim. That's all. Or anybody else who has any kind of responsibility for other people, authority-wise. Good advice. The okay, I didn't plan on speaking about any of this, and we didn't cover really anything that I wanted, but that's okay. That's the purpose of the shiur is not really that I should tell you what I want to tell you. The purpose is that we should speak about... I don't know how much we accomplished, but at least we accomplished that everybody understands now why nobody knows what to do. Yeah, that's good. It's good to understand that also. Yeah.
The Maharal of something.
Maharil Diskin. That the Maharil Diskin was Rabbi Yehuda Leib Diskin, was the Rav of Yerushalayim, and I think he was before Rav Shmuel Salant, or at the same time as Rav Shmuel Salant. And he's the one who said that judging other people favorably is for your benefit, is just as much as for their benefit. Okay, next week, there will be a shir next week, in Ritz Hashem, and next week we'll try, I didn't say I'm promising anything next week except what we do, right? Okay.